Welcome to a deep dive. Today, we're plunging into something absolutely fundamental to how we connect, persuade, and how we're perceived, yet we rarely give it much thought. The incredible unspoken power of our voice. We're not just talking about the words, but everything else our voice communicates.
That's exactly right. Think about how much energy we put into crafting the perfect email, choosing just the right words, you know, for a presentation or finding that perfect phrase in conversation.
Yeah, we focus so much on the what.
But this stack of fascinating notes and research we're digging into today really highlights that the sound of your voice, how you actually deliver those words, well, it's sending its own powerful message, totally independent of the vocabulary.
Okay, let's unpack this then. The material you've shared dives deep into these nuances of vocal communication, often called paralanguage.
Yeah, paralanguage.
Our mission really is to cut through all that research, pull out the most impactful insights, and give you a shortcut to understanding how your voice shapes perceptions, conveys emotion, and influences interaction in ways you might not even realize.
Get ready to hear your own voice and everyone else's a bit differently after this.
I'm ready.
And it all starts with a fundamental fact. Each one of us possesses a truly unique vocal signature. Every voice generates a distinctive acoustic signal, essentially, a voice print.
A voice print. That's such a cool term. The sources mention how technology is now using this almost like fingerprint ID.
Exactly. It's that unique identifier. And it raises a simple but, I think, powerful question for you listening. Could your closest friends, your family, recognize you instantly just by the sound of your voice, without seeing you, without hearing specific words?
For most people, I imagine the answer is a definite yes.
It usually is, yeah. And that really speaks to just how distinctive that voice print is for each of us.
So, okay, we have this unique vocal print. What do we call all the other stuff the voice is doing besides just forming words?
That's where paralanguage comes in. The sources define it as, like, the collection of vocal techniques and qualities we use to emphasize the sound and, crucially, the intention behind our words.
Ah, the intention.
If there's one core idea to take away, it's this. The impact of your message comes not only from what you say, but profoundly from how you say it.
Ah, got it. So paralanguage, that layer of meaning wrapped around the words themselves.
Precisely. It's the sound that provides others with these vital clues. It can signal our attitudinal state, you know, hints about how we feel about what we're saying or who we're talking to. Mm. It even lets others pick up on our physical condition, maybe, or our emotional state at that moment.
So if we change how we sound, if we modify these vocal elements, these paralinguistic cues, we're directly changing how someone gets our message, how they understand it.
Absolutely. You can take the exact same set of words, and just by varying the sound, sometimes we do it intentionally, sometimes not so much convey completely different meanings or feelings.
The source material has some brilliant examples for this.
Yeah, they're great illustrations.
I love that one from Shakespeare's Othello. Desdemona, she's totally baffled by Othello's fury. And she says, "I understand a fury in your words, but not the words."
It's perfect, isn't it? She's not really processing the literal meaning of his angry accusations because, well, she knows they aren't true.
Right.
What she is picking up on is the sheer intensity of his emotion, the fury carried through the sound, the raw quality of his voice, the volume, the pace.
Yeah.
The paralanguage is so powerful there, it just overrides the actual words he's speaking.
That really shows the how totally dominating the what. The sources also use that classic example, Robert J. McCloskey saying, "I would not speculate." Seems simple enough.
Right. Very straightforward on the surface.
But the material shows how just shifting the stress on one word changes everything.
It really does. If he says, "I would not speculate," stressing "would not." Well, that could subtly imply, look, I personally won't, but maybe the department hasn't got a clue. If he stresses, "I would not speculate," it might signal something like, "I won't speculate on that specific point, but maybe I could on something else related." Mm-hmm. And if he stresses, "I would not speculate," it could carry this hidden message like, "While I won't, you're probably wrong for even thinking that way."
Wow. That's remarkable.
Yeah.
Three completely different potential meanings tucked inside the same three words just based on emphasis.
It's all in the delivery.
The material also gives another simple but really effective example with the sentence, "He's giving this money to Herbie."
Yes, that's a great one for demonstrating focus. Say it five times. Just put the stress on a different word each time.
Right. So he's giving this money to Herbie.
Yeah.
That focuses on the person doing it.
Yeah.
He's giving this money to Herbie, emphasizes the action.
Mm-hmm.
He's giving this money to Herbie. highlights the specific money.
Exactly.
He's giving this money to Herbie, stresses the thing being given.
Right.
And finally, he's giving this money to Herbie, points straight to the recipient.
The same sentence? Totally different implication depending on where you shine that vocal spotlight.
It's amazing. And the research even includes things like grunts, sighs, screams, even silence as contributing to this layer of communication.
Oh, absolutely. These vocalizations, or even the lack of them, they also feed into how the listener interprets things. The really compelling insight here from the sources is that, look, regardless of the words you choose, the sound you make is communicating something pretty significant about you and your message.
And apparently that sound triggers some incredibly quick judgments about us. Often accurate, the research suggests, based only on how we sound.
It's quite striking, isn't it?
Yeah. People making estimations about age, gender, appearance, even socioeconomic status, just from hearing a voice clip.
It is. And beyond those demographics, the voice also seems to provide consistent cues about personality traits, whether someone leans more extroverted or introverted.
Oh, really?
Yeah, their presentation of masculinity or femininity, levels of dominance or assertiveness, and even perceived charisma.
So your voice can actually broadcast how dominant or charismatic you seem to others.
According to the material, yes, it contributes significantly to those impressions. And there's a specific finding highlighted. Speakers with deeper, lower-pitched voices tend to be favored in many contexts.
Interesting.
And certain specific speech qualities also get rated higher in terms of, you know, vocal attractiveness.
That's fascinating. Now, the sources also touch on a more sensitive area related to how we sound accents.
They do, and it's an important point. The research indicates that non-native speakers who have heavy accents can, unfortunately, be perceived by native speakers as belonging to an out-group.
Right, that us versus them kind of thing.
Yeah, and this perception can, regrettably, trigger stereotyping and prejudice based on assumptions about the speaker's background or capabilities rather than anything they've actually said or done. What's particularly concerning is a finding mentioned. Information delivered by non-native speakers with heavy accents may be perceived as less trustworthy by some native speakers.
Wow, that is a really stark reminder of how the sound of the voice, in this case an accent, can unfortunately override the content or credibility of the message itself. It can trigger these unconscious biases.
It really underscores the power of paralanguage, doesn't it? Sometimes for good, sometimes, well, for ill. So to really understand this, maybe we should break down the key building blocks, the specific vocal properties the sources identify as making up paralanguage.
Good idea. The material lists pitch, rate, volume, articulation, pronunciation, vocal quality, and acknowledges tone is often used as this big umbrella term covering many of these.
Right. Let's take them one by one and pull out what the research says. First up, pitch. Think of this as the musicality or melody of your voice, how high or low it is, the rising and falling intonation, the inflection.
Like how saying mm-hmm with a high pitch means something totally different than saying it with a low pitch. The sources use that simple example.
Exactly. That simple sound, just change the pitch, and the meaning is instantly understood. The research mentions concepts like your habitual pitch, sort of your average level and your pitch range, how much you can actually vary it.
Okay.
It also points out how we intuitively adjust pitch, like the exaggerated high pitch and variance we use in baby talk.
Ah, yes. That extreme end of the pitch spectrum.
A key insight about pitch is that for communication to be effective, the pitch needs to be appropriate. Appropriate for the message and for the listener. Varying your pitch isn't just for show. It actually helps punctuate meaning, clarifies things.
All right.
In the USA, for instance, the sources note that lower pitch patterns are often associated with seriousness, maybe confidence, while higher ones can sometimes be perceived as flightiness or suggesting less confidence.
And the sources also note that in some contexts, women using a higher pitch might be perceived as more emotional.
Yes. The perception is mentioned in the material. And interestingly, the research also notes a preference. Women tend to prefer men with strong, lower average pitch voices.
Okay, interesting dynamics there. Moving from pitch to speed, that's rate. How quickly or slowly we speak.
The average adult speaking rate is generally cited as somewhere between, say, 120 and 150 words per minute. But of course, factors like where you grew up can influence your natural average rate.
I know speaking too quickly is often seen as a communication problem. The sources mentioned listeners can get lost or just lose interest.
They do. And it's interesting how quick judgments get tied to rate. The research points to this tendency to stereotype slower speakers. maybe seeing them as less knowledgeable, perhaps less honest, or even less persuasive compared to faster speakers.
That's a surprising stereotype linked just to speed, isn't it?
It is. Rate is also a pretty strong indicator of emotional state. We tend to speed up when we're nervous or maybe angry.
Mm-hmm.
Conversely, the research suggests we might slow down when we're trying to be deceptive, feeling less than truthful, or maybe when we feel inferior or incapable in a situation.
So rate can be this subtle emotional or psychological tell.
Mm-hmm.
The sources also mention we often unconsciously mirror the speaking rate of whoever we're talking to.
Yeah, that mirroring is part of building rapport, connecting. But yes, your rate definitely reflects your state of being. Nervousness, anger, confidence, deception. And culturally, perceptions differ quite a bit.
Oh.
Well, in Korea, for example, rapid speakers are apparently seen less favorably than slower ones, potentially seen as less persuasive. But then you look at the USA, and a faster rate can actually contribute to judgments of overall competence.
That's a really key insight. What's seen as effective speed isn't universal at all.
Not at all.
And just like pitch, the sources really stress that varying your speaking rate is crucial. A monotonous, consistent rate just makes it harder to hold on to the listener's attention.
Absolutely. Variety is key for engagement.
Okay.
Okay, next up, volume. This is simply the intensity of your voice. You know, from a whisper all the way to a shout.
And how loud or soft you are really depends on who you're talking to, where you are, the message itself. Lots of factors.
Precisely. But the volume itself carries meaning and influences perception. A strong, resonant voice is often associated with boldness, with confidence.
Right.
On the other hand, a soft voice, while it can be interpreted negatively, seen as timidity, maybe lack of confidence, uncertainty, but it can also be perceived positively, suggesting calmness, self-assurance. It really depends on the context.
Volume is definitely tied tightly to emotion, though.
Mm.
Raising your voice, shouting it, almost universally signals anger or maybe a display of dominance, though sometimes it's just extreme happiness or excitement.
True. It can be joy, too. You can certainly use volume strategically, like raising it just slightly to capture attention. But the sources do caution that inappropriate volume can lead to misperceptions or negative impressions, like seeming aggressive when you didn't mean to or maybe timid when you weren't feeling that way.
Okay. Makes sense. Then we have the mechanics of how clearly we speak.
Yeah.
Articulation and pronunciation.
Right. Articulation is about the distinctness, the clearness of your sounds. The sources give examples like saying, come with me, clearly, versus sort of mumbling, come with me, or saying them instead of dim.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes poor articulation, like mumbling, can even be related to your mood, like being tired or maybe depressed.
And pronunciation is just about saying words correctly, according to standard conventions.
Exactly. Moving on, we have vocal quality. This is more of a persistent trait of your voice that develops over time. What we might describe using terms like sexy, shallow, maybe nasal.
And the descriptions in the sources can be quite judgmental, like labeling a nasal voice as potentially argumentative or lazy.
Yeah, those perceptions are noted.
Or a raspy or throaty voice suggesting someone is older, careless, or maybe less intelligent.
These are perceptions the research finds are linked to specific vocal qualities. The sources note that what's perceived as a good voice quality might potentially enhance relationships, while a quality perceived negatively could hinder them. Of course, temporary factors like illness can affect quality. A sore throat makes your voice husky. A cold can make it sound nasal.
But apparently, most people have a generally shared sense of what constitutes an attractive voice.
That seems to be the case according to the research, yes. Mm. And voices that are judged as attractive are often perceived then as belonging to people who are more competent, more sensitive, more open.
Wow.
They're even linked, in perception at least, to having a better personality overall.
So vocal quality isn't just about the sound itself. It triggers these powerful assumptions about character and ability.
It certainly seems to influence those initial judgments quite a bit. The material also brings up the role of pauses and silence.
Are pauses actually considered part of paralanguage too?
Yes, because they shape the overall flow and meaning of the vocal stream. You know, spontaneous speech isn't usually perfectly smooth. It often has natural starts and stops.
Right. Normal conversation isn't scripted.
Exactly. Some pauses are grammatical. They occur naturally where commas or sentence endings give us a breath, a natural break. But the sources also point out those other gaps. The ones caused by unnecessary repetitions or fillers.
The ums and uhs.
The sounds, yeah, they can affect how fluent or maybe how confident a speaker is perceived to be.
That makes complete sense.
Right.
Now, the sources specifically dig into gender effects on voice and how those voices are perceived.
Right. The most obvious biological difference is pitch, with women generally having higher voices than men. But the research points to socialized patterns and perceptions that go beyond just biology.
Like what?
Well, women's voices often higher pitched, sometimes perceived as more hesitant or softer in volume, and using maybe more inflection can, in some contexts, weaken perceptions of authority or decisiveness.
Okay.
Whereas men's voices, which tend to be lower, are often used, perhaps culturally encouraged, to assert points and take conversational command, potentially enhancing impressions of control and credibility.
It sounds like there's an unconscious sort of influence happening there, adjusting how we speak based on expectations.
The sources suggest exactly that we often unconsciously adjust our pitch, volume, and other vocalic behaviors to conform to or reflect prevalent cultural expectations and stereotypes about gender and communication styles.
And there's a specific difference noted in how sentences tend to end.
A very interesting one, yeah. The research mentions that men commonly end sentences by lowering both their pitch and volume. This tends to convey decisiveness, finality.
Okay.
Women, however, more commonly end sentences with an upward intonation, like a slight rise, which can, in perception, impress uncertainty or tentativeness, even if that's not the speaker's actual intent. It can sound like a question sometimes.
That's a really subtle vocal cue with potentially big implications for how a message actually lands.
Definitely.
Finally, the sources touch briefly on the voice in the digital age.
Yeah, they highlight that while text-based communication like texting and email evolved partly to carry the content of vocal messages, they are inherently less rich. They're less accurately interpreted than face-to-face interaction, which has both the vocal and the facial cues.
Right, because all those layers of paralanguage we've been talking about are just missing.
Exactly. So what do? We try to recreate them using symbols. We use bolding for emphasis, kind of like volume or stress.
Italics too.
Italics, capitalizing for shouting, using acronyms, changing font sizes, and of course, emoticons and emoji are basically attempts to inject emotional and attitudinal cues back in.
The cues that would normally come through our voice and face.
It's like we're intuitively trying to put the paralanguage back into the text. It's a fascinating workaround trying to restore some of that missing nonverbal dimension.
So pulling all these threads together then, this deep dive into the source material truly reveals just how much is being communicated through the sound of our voice, completely separate from the words themselves.
Yeah, everything from our emotions and attitudes.
To these surprising perceptions about our personality, our age, even our appearance.
And as we saw with accents, how unfortunate sometimes biased judgments about group membership and trustworthiness can be triggered purely by sound. It's quite powerful.
Understanding these elements of paralanguage,
Yeah.
pitch, rate, volume, quality, all of it isn't just academic, is it? It can profoundly impact your ability to communicate effectively. It allows you to maybe wield your own vocal power more intentionally, and it makes you a far more perceptive listener, more attuned to those hidden messages beneath the surface.
It definitely adds a whole new dimension to listening, that's for sure.
Indeed. So, to leave you with a final thought, drawn from the material we explored today, if people make such rapid and sometimes surprisingly accurate judgments about our age, gender, appearance, socioeconomic status, and even personality based solely on how we sound,
Yeah.
and if the perception of accents can unfortunately trigger harmful stereotyping and prejudice, how much power does the sound of your voice truly hold in shaping how you are seen and maybe even how you're treated in the world? Something to consider the next time you open your mouth to speak, or perhaps even more importantly, the next time you really listen.